Okay, so we are holding on Mem Dalet Omer Aleph, about the middle of the Omer. Line begins Shchita. Mem Dalet Omer Aleph, about the middle of the Omer. Okay. We had a discussion about the Turbat Havesht, which is the area immediately above the esophagus itself. We were discussing what the exact definition of the Turbat Havesht is. We got into a discussion, is that a valid place to shecht in, or is that too high up? In the end, we said that we understood Rav and Shmuel's machlokas about how large a hole makes the animal trace. We understood at first the machlokas of them to also be, can you shecht there or not, that Rav would say yes and Shmuel would say no. And then we established that it's not so. Both Rav and Shmuel agree that you can't shecht over there. The machlokas between them is strictly how large a hole there will make the animal trace. Rav says even a small hole, and Shmuel will say only if it's right. Okay. And we mentioned them. The last
when you shecht, you have to shecht the vesh and the comer.
We learned in the previous parak that with a bird you technically only need to shecht one, although hachilah you should shecht two. With either one.
Oh, either one.
Usually it would be the comer, because it's in front, but with the behemoth you have to shecht roiv of both, or ideally all of them. Okay. So we mentioned in that connection, we said that Rav had said that there's certain limitations how high or how low on the vesh you can shecht. In the previous paragraph, we talked about how high on the kone you can shecht. We talked about the tabas angola, the cricoid cartilage, the one ring of cartilage that completely surrounds the whole, the half of something else, that's the kova, that's above that, that's the thyroid cartilage. We talked about the shifui kova, the place where it starts slanting from it, the Adam's apple, basically, whatever. We talked about a number of details of that, but we never talked about how high on the vesh you can shecht. So now we're going to talk about that. Rav says there's a shear. So lemaila ad kama. So how high up can you shecht? Amar Rav Nachman ad kidei tfisas yad, up to the point that you can grab with your fingers. Which means Rashi says that it means you have to leave of the vesht or of the turbis havesht, whatever. You have to leave the amount of space that you could hold with three or four fingers and shecht only below that. Some of them approach a little less than a tefach. Rashi brings another explanation from the Gaonim that it's, or not from the Gaonim, he just says, I heard another explanation that it means the amount that you can hold with the end with the tips of your fingernails. Rashi says, I don't like that. That doesn't seem to be long enough. After you call that tefach yad. However, Tosfos brings from the Bahag that that is the correct explanation, that it does mean the amount of two esbos you have to leave over.
Not three.
And not so the Bahag says that Kadesh Kisat Yad means not like Rashi had said three or four, but rather only two.
Two is not a yad. How can you be
Kisat Yad? It's enough that you can grab with two fingers. Is enough that you can grab something with two fingers. So that's the Bahag explains. Kadesh Kisat Yad. Kedinokit inish b'shteyas ba'osav. The Bahag says the amount that a person can hold with his two fingers. Probably maybe the Bahag means like this: the amount that a person can hold with his thumb and his index finger. I don't know. Whatever it is, and Tosfos says, look, I mean, what the Bahag says, he's one of the Gaonim, Divim Dibe Kabbalah. What he says is the Kabbalah. It goes back to the time of that Amoraim. Yeah, and the picture it shows exactly that. That's with the, it's talking about pinching with the thumb and the fingernail. Pinching with the thumb and the index finger. Okay, so anyway, you also have an argument among the Mephoshim. How does this relate to the descriptions that we said before about where it widens and where it stays put and where it shrinks and whatever? Is that the same thing? Marsha says, for example, that it is the same thing. All it is those things you can only tell after you shecht. If you want to know before all the animal's alive where to shecht, then you use this that we're saying over here, the three or four or one espa, as the case may be. And then you have other Mephoshim will explain that it's actually arguing with the descriptions that we said before. They were giving a certain shear. This Gemara over here was giving a different shear. And Shulchan Aruch mentioned, so the conclusion is, so you should better to be choshish for all of them, to make sure that you shecht low down enough that you'll fulfill all the opinions. You're definitely not in the Turbat Havesht. The Ramah brings from Rishonim that they have the Kabbalah that the proper place to shecht is you have the animal's ear will bend down the point to where when you bend the animal's ear down along the neck, the point where it reaches, you should shecht below that point. And that way you're covered by all the effects. Okay. Lamasa ad kama, how
you can just feel with a hand in the neck on the neck.
It's not so easy to feel. Where, how would you feel the vesh, especially is behind the conna? You wouldn't feel.
No, the vesh is okay, but you can feel the
conna. Fine, okay. That's we were discussing before how high you can check with the conna. Now we're dealing with the vesh. So with the vesh, there can also be a problem with hagroma, so that's what we have to deal with. What's the highest thing that you can check? Okay.
If you go past the vest, both of them, you hit a bone eventually.
Well, eventually, if you go far enough in, sure, you'll hit the neck bone. We talked about that in the first paragraph. If you do, does it make the trafe, or does it, Well, besides the fact that it might blunt the knife, though, that it might cause a nick in the knife, there's also the possibility that maybe cutting into the mafrekis, among other things, makes blood get absorbed into the muscles, and then therefore it's hard to take it out with melucha. Okay. Anyway, the normal thing is you just cut the simanim, and as we talked about, maybe also the viridin, the various blood vessels in the neck. Okay, fine. Lamata ad kama, what about, what's the lowest point of the vesh where you're able to shaft? So high up, the limit is ad kadei tfisas yad, which we have these various definitions, whether it means 3 or 4, it's boris, like Rashi says, or whether it means a pinch with the 2 fingers, like Tosfos brings from the back.
2 fingers, you pinch with the kani with 2 fingers?
No, in other words, you put directly below the animal's head, when the neck starts, you pinch over there, not pinch, whatever, you hold like that. Whatever is below that, you're able to shaft in. If you have, here's the animal's head above here, then you hold over here, and then whatever's below there, you're able
to. In the neck, you're talking
about? In the neck, we're talking about, yes, obviously. Yeah, that's what you shaft.
So you hold 2 fingers like this on the neck? I'm not sure.
Here's a picture. What you're able to hold of the vesh with 2 fingers, according to the Bahag, below that is what you can shaft in. The Hainu Roich of Agudin, or the width of a thumb, effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can shaft below that. According to Rashi, that it means 3 or 4 fingers. You also have, there's also a machlokas among the Mephoshim, among the Rishonim. Is this a fixed amount for any kind of creature, or is it that you scale it down? I mean, for example, here it points out, Tosfos points out, by a bird, 4 fingers, like Rashi says, would be the whole length of the neck.
Yeah.
So therefore, so Tosfos says that so that's one reason maybe to prefer Tosfos's Bahag's explanation. But also Tosfos says maybe it means what you scale it down based on the size of the animal. The fourth voice, according to Rashi, maybe for a larger animal, for a smaller one, you would scale it down. Okay. Lamasa ad kama. What about, what's the lowest point on the vesh at which you can shecht? Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Bavua, ad kadesh yasir. Only down to the point where it starts getting hairy. Now, what you have is, as the Gemara is going to explain, so what it is like this. So you have here's the end of the vesh. Yeah, you have the end of the vesh over here. It starts going into the first stomach, the teres. The inside of the stomach, and the Gemara is going to say soon, sometimes also the end of the vesh itself, we'll get to that in a minute, is covered with little hair-like things. They're actually, in medicalese, they call them villi, and the purpose of them... What? By personal author, right. And the purpose of them is basically they help the animal absorb nutrients from the food. Like this way, you have a larger surface area to absorb whatever. Okay, so anyway, so you have such a thing. So up until the point where it starts getting hairy, you can check down to there. The question is, Amy, you might say, what do you mean? How could that be? The last pefach of the vesh, close to the keres, so the last kefach above the keres, zehu keres apnimi. That is the definition of keres apnimi. We learned in the Mishnah, we said, we had in the Mishnah the keres apnimi versus the keres achitzon as far as how much of a hole makes it today. We said that keres apnimi is the keres apnimi, even a small hole makes it straight, as opposed to the keres achitzona, you would need most of the length of it to be ripped open for it to be straight. Well, so the keres is the first of the 4 stomachs, yes.
Well,
but the question is, so we have later on in the Gemara on Daf Nun, we're going to deal with in more detail what exactly the definition of keres apnimi and keres achitzona is. We're going to have a few different opinions. But Rav says over there, the definition is like this. You have, here's the vesh, the esophagus, going into the keres, going into the first stomach. Rav is saying the keres apnimi is this, the last bit of the vesh over there. And then the whole keres itself is called keres achitzona, and the animal would be treif only if most of it was ripped open. In other words, Rav is saying that part, the end of the vesh, is called already keres. How can you shecht in it? You're telling me you can shecht all the way down to where the hair starts, and the hair only starts inside the actual keres, inside the actual stomach. Yeah, so that's the question. So how could it be? According to what you're telling me, According to what you're telling me, Rav Nachman, it sounds like, and if you shech down there, so in the last tefach of the vesh, effectively, according to Rav, you're shechting in the keres. So according to him, that's already called keres apnimi. It's still a vesh, yeah, but the point is, on the face of it, if we're saying the definition is until it gets hairy, but Rav is saying that the vesh, Rav is saying the keres already begins at the end of the vesh, the end of the tube is already considered the keres, you can't shech in the keres. Yeah. Okay, so the answer is, Ema tefach bikeres. You have to fix up what Rav is saying. It's the other way around. Not the last tefach of the vesht is called keres apnimi. What Rav is saying is, within the keres itself, the first tefach of the keres, closest to the vesht, is called the keres apnimi. Everything beyond that is considered keres achitzon. So if the keres is, let's say, 10, I don't know, the keres is, let's say, 10 tefachim long, the vesht goes into the keres. Yeah, that's the food is swallowed, it goes down the first pouch, yeah. The woman is holding
the
marshal.
The
same.
Right.
So the vesh goes into there. The food goes directly into there.
Okay.
So now, we thought that Rav was saying that the end of the vesh over here is already called keres. So we're saying, how can you shech there? The answer is no. Rav is saying the other way around. The first tefach of the keres is called keres apnimi. Anything beyond that is called keres achitzon, and only a much larger rip would make it today. So therefore, yes, Rav is not saying that any part of the vesht is called keres. Therefore, that can still fit with what we said, that you can shecht anywhere in the vesht all the way down to where the hair starts. Or another possibility, you can answer, ki ka'omer Rav v'torda d'matir trei. You know what? We don't have to fix up what Rav is saying. Rav might be talking. We might still stick with what Rav said originally. The last tefach of the vesht is called keres apnimi, but Rav is talking specifically in the case of an ox, where the end of the vesht itself has villi on it also, has hair-like things on it as well. In other words, you would say the keres apnimi according to Rav begins here. But in other kinds of animals, where you don't have any of it in the vesht, and only begins when it broadens out to the keres, so Rav would say over there that the keres apnimi is the beginning of the keres itself. So no contradiction. So in other words, what we would say is, yeah, you can't shecht in the hairy area, because that would be called keres. In other animals, the hair only begins in the keres itself, therefore you can shecht all the way down to the bottom of the vesht. In cattle, it starts higher up, it starts at the tefach from the end, therefore you can't shecht there either. By the way, I mean, it could be also, I haven't looked it up in detail, but besides villi that you have in the body to be able to absorb nutrients and whatever, you also have another kind of hair-like thing that you find in some places called cilia, which are meant to, like, move things along. So it could be the hair we're talking about at the end of the vesh over here, and a cow might be, like, cilia over there to help move the food down into the stomach. I don't know. Anyway. No, not the hair. This is on the inside of the vest we're talking about. It's like little hair-like things that help push the food along.
We don't go by that. No, it doesn't go by this.
The halakha, what do you mean?
It goes by the villi.
I'm saying, so you have two different ways of understanding. You know, we're saying in a shur, the fact is you do have villi or cilia or whatever towards the end of the vest. So therefore, we can be saying that you're not allowed to shech there, and that's called cheres apnimi. Okay. Fine. Amr of Nachman Amr Shmuel. So now let's talk about another din. Going back to the turbis of vesht, we started talking about that. That led us into a discussion how high and how low can you shech in the vesht. So now let's talk about another din with the turbis of vesht.
What's the turbis?
Turbis literally means the entryway. So a tabitha is like a garden in front of a house. So turbis of vesht means like the entryway into the vesht. Okay. Yeah. Normally that area is tightly attached inside the jaw of the animal. And then you have, hanging down from there, is the vesht, which is inside the muscles and the neck and whatever, and yeah. So, Amr of Nachman Amr Shmuel, turbis havesht chenito kuli milechi, if the entire turbis havesht was removed from the jaw of the animal, so in other words, the jaw, the pashtus, what we mean is the jaw is still there, but the turbis havesht, the inside layer over there that makes up the pharynx or whatever, the entryway to the vesht, they became torn off or peeled off from the muscles of the jaw. But then kosher, the animal is still kosher. And v'tana tuna, and in fact, our Tana taught such a thing later on in our parak. We have the next Mishnah, nito lechi apachten kosher. We say over there that if the lower jaw was removed, then it's kosher. Now, if the lower jaw is removed, then obviously you don't have the turbis avesh, which is inside there, is not attached anymore, and nevertheless, we're saying the animal is still kosher. In other words, it could live. Yeah, it would have a hard time eating. You might have to feed it with a feeding tube or something, but it's not in and of itself something that would make it safe. By the way, here's where the Rambam mentions that the implication of it is that Rambam learned that what we're saying is only if the lower jaw is removed is the animal kosher, but if the upper jaw is removed, I mentioned at the beginning of the parak, that Rambam holds, we would say the animal is safe. So the Chachmei Luna asked the Rambam about that. Where do you get that from? And he explains because from medically, if the upper jaw is missing, then cold air goes directly into the windpipe and eventually into the lungs and kills the animal. The upper jaw of the animal. New an animal has an upper jaw and a lower jaw, same as a person does. So the lower jaw, if it's removed, we're saying over here it's kosher, because then it's just the animal still breathes in air properly. It just can't eat properly. Fine, you can feed it with a tube or something. You can stick the food down its throat. But if the upper one is missing, then I'm upset. So you have some Rishonim argue with him on it. You can't add to the treifas on our own. Nevertheless, most of the Rishonim say that we should be machmir like the Rambam, and that's indeed how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch.
It's only
because it's also cold climate. No, but actually, any kind of climate. We're not going to start making distinctions. The Pashtus, it also means, according to the Rambam, so what? I mean, you could argue, you could make like an artificial upper jaw or whatever and warm up the air with that. Apparently, it still wouldn't work. Okay, mask for a papa. However, a papa asks on that, how can you say if the turbis avesh is taken off from the jaw, then it's kosher. Don't you have the problem that the simonim themselves have been dislocated, which we've talked about a few times already, that you have an issue with that as far as shechting it. And there you have, by the way, the machloikas again between Rashi and Tosfos that we've been having several times in the Masechta already, is the definition of ikur, is this the ikur that we're talking about, which is one of the five things that passes shechita? You have shechik, shehiya, chalada, Hagrom, Chalod, Shia, Drosa, Chaloda, Hagroma, and Ikur. So is this the Ikur that we're talking about? Ikur means torn out, literally. So according to Rashi, that's what we mean over here. In other words, that's one of the five things that would pass for the Shchita. If you were to shecht an animal with that condition, it wouldn't be a valid Shchita, it would be Nevela. And Tosfos discusses here and earlier in the Masechta several times that not necessarily. It may mean that the animal is not necessarily Nevela, but it is Treifa. Or it might mean Tosfos brings from the Bahag in a few places that maybe what it means is it's not the animal is neither the animal is not trefa or nevela, you just can't shecht it. So practically speaking, eventually it's going to become a nevela because there's nothing you can do with it. But it means, for example, as long as it's alive, you can use its milk. If it's a chicken, you can use its eggs, etc. That sort of thing. It's kosher, you just can't shecht it. Anyway, so those are the different possibilities. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, so according to sort of Papa is arguing, what do you mean? If the turbis avesh is taken off the lechi, then the animal's kosher. What about ikur simanim? So the question is, will a Papa kasha masnitin nita lechi afachten kosher? Well, okay, what is Rav Papa going to do with our Mishnah? The fact is, the next Mishnah says, if the lower jaw is removed, then it's kosher. So bishlema masnitin Rav Papa lekasha. So we can answer like this. The Mishnah is not a contradiction to Rav Papa because there's two possibilities. What happened to the jaw, and therefore what happened to the simonim? Had iakuri, had igum igumi me'ilave simonim. Okay, had iakur akuri would mean what we just described, that the simonim themselves are dislocated. That the papa is saying, on the face of it, it should be trefa, nevela or trefa or whatever, as the case may be. Had igum igumi me'ilave simonim. The case that the Mishnah is talking about, where nita lechi atachten is kosher, is the lechi atachten was chopped off or otherwise removed, but above the simonim. So therefore, at a place where it doesn't affect the simonim at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, the Rambam and his tshuva to the Chachmei Luno, they were arguing that maybe they were saying, when they're saying, where are you getting this thing about the upper jaw, they say, Adrabba, you should say, I mean, the Mishnah is telling us the lower jaw, and the Chiddush is, you would think, even though Ikur Simonim, like our Gemara is saying, nevertheless the animal is kosher, and the Rambam explains to them anatomically, the actual lechi itself is not really that close to the simonim. The Rambam defines the lechi as the jaw itself, from where it articulates over there, from the joint of it. So therefore, that particular point is pretty far away from the simonim, he says. So in and of itself, the lechi being removed is not going to affect the simonim. You can have it, maybe, as the Gemara is saying over here, but it doesn't necessarily have to. The lechi is the jaw, the lower jaw of the animal.
Which part of the jaw?
The whole jaw. You have the ends of it over there that articulate with the skull. So over here. So you can have that so the Gemara was thinking that any time you remove the lechi, inevitably that affects the simanim. Now the Gemara is saying not necessarily that you have. It's possible to. But now the Gemara is saying not necessarily. It's possible to remove the lechi without, and the Rambam spells that out more clearly in the Struva. It's possible to remove the whole lechi without touching any of the simanim. Yeah, without doing any.
And the animal being alive.
Yes, because you could. Igum literally means it's chopped off. So, like, for example, you have to imagine, like, the lechi is chopped off from the, you know, Rashi says it's chopped off from the muscles that are from the muscles that are around the simanim. So, therefore, so you have the jaw is missing, but nevertheless, the simanim and all the muscles around them are still intact.
Not somewhere inside.
Yes, further down, but it's further down. But yeah. Okay. So, Ela l'shmur kasha. So Rapapa is not contradicted by that, because Rapapa can say, I'm saying it's possible if there was ikur, and I'm saying it's not possible if there's no ikur. The jaw can be removed without there being ikur, without the simanim themselves being dislocated. The simanim being how deep the cut was and how much of the lechi was removed or whatever. Ela l'shmur kasha. But the question is on Shmuel. That, again, where Shmuel started saying that if you, even if the turbis avesh was removed from the lechi, then it's kosher, and he's proving it because nita lechi attacked in kosher. So in other words, it sounds like Shmuel is not concerned about ikur, but the fact is there could very well be ikur over there. And after all, he's mentioning that the turbis avesh being removed from the lechi, which implies ikur, it implies that it's dislocated from the muscles around it. It's peeled off. Yeah. The answer is, the answer is, you can say that Shmuel would say, not if the whole Turbat Savesh was removed, as we said originally, then he would agree it's possible, but versus when he says if the majority of it was removed. So the question is, okay, but don't we have another din that said, that Rabbi Baba Chana says in the name of Shmuel, that if most of the simonim are nidaldalu, meaning like they're like shaky, kind of like hanging off, the answer is there's a difference how it was removed. One case would be where it was peeled off. The ikbal, Rashi explains, is like the word kolach, which means to peel. The word kofal, pefal, kofelamed, sometimes also means the same thing. It means to peel off. In other words, you can have that, like, it came off gently, like it was, whatever it was that caused it to come off, it came off, there wasn't any force involved. So then there's not necessarily ikur involved. And therefore, so if the whole thing is removed, then you have a problem. But as long as you don't have roiv of it removed from the muscles underneath, then fine, eventually it can heal. Hod ifruki, as opposed to what would be the case with today, even where you have less than roiv, is where you have where it was violently torn out. Neck of a koyach, Rashi says. So then you have, it's a little bit here, a little bit there, but the point is, even the parts where it's still attached, it's sort of a weak attachment. So you have the pulling was done over there, and it depends how they were removed. When we said nito turbis havesh shenito kula milechi kosher, it depends whether it was like a gentle thing that was peeled, that it came off on its own or whatever, versus where it was pulled off. Where then, if it's pulled off, then it'll be possible because even the little bit that's left is not really very strongly attached.
And this could be checked only after shita.
Of course, it would be like most other things. It could only be checked after shita, yeah. You do have, by the way, there's a vast number of different gersois and perushim over here. You have a whole chart over here, which I'm not going to go through in detail, but there you have a whole chart over here of different gershonim and different gersois and different perushim in the Gemara over here, among others, that one of them is that we're making a distinction whether whether it was peeled off or whether there's a hole in it, etc. So it is a mice, and Shulchan Aruch says that the Rama says we're machmir regardless. Then we're not going to start playing games with what the turbit. There's a problem with the turbit avesh. Then we declare it trick. Okay. Next thing the Mishnah had said, uksukas hagageres. He said the next thing in the list of things that make an animal trick is if the gageres, the windpipe, was cut. And we said that unlike the vesh, where even a small hole makes it possible, the gargaris, you would have to have most of it. Most of it would have to be cut. The tana, that's what we're going to learn in the bright. The kama psukas hagargaris. What is this definition of psukas hagargaris? Beruba is if most of it is cut. the Kama Rubba. I mean, anatomically, Bapashtus, the reason is because the Vesht is has food in it, so even a tiny amount of food getting into the inside of the body is going to cause trouble, you know, as opposed to the Gargaret, you know, you have some of it is missing, but the remaining part, the animal can still manage to breathe. It'll, you know, one won't get a full lung full of breath each time. It may be short of breath or whatever, but one won't necessarily kill it. Apichthidus is something I don't remember now where I saw it. I think it was in a mimer of the Alter Rebbe, or I don't remember anyway. The point is that it might have been a sikh of our Rebbe. Anyway, the idea is that the Pnimis in Yonim also, the Vesht represents more involvement with Olam Hazeh, because after all, it's food. It's Dashnius. The Kana, the windpipe, is with air, so it represents more Ruchnius. So like a small problem in Gashmius, and in a person's attitude towards Gashmius, and a person's level of involvement with Gashmius is a much more serious problem than a problem with how they're relating to and how they're with Ruchnius. Okay. So, Bakama Ruba. Now, what is the definition of Roy for this person? Now, what we have to understand for the next piece of Gemara is, we mentioned already in the first parak that the windpipe is surrounded by rings of cartilage. Now, most of those rings are like this. Most of them do not surround the windpipe completely. You have cartilage around in a horseshoe shape around three sides of it. And then you have the two ends of it are held together by a strip of muscle. Basically, what that does is it allows the windpipe to expand and contract a bit. Because you have, for example, a person or an animal eats food, and you have a large amount of food going down the esophagus, so then the windpipe needs to shrink a little bit to provide room for it. It's why, by the way, sometimes you eat, and here he points out, that's why sometimes you eat like a large bit of food, and you eat a large piece of food, and you feel a little out of breath, because your windpipe is narrowing to compensate. Then you have the tabach agdoila, the cricoid cartilage, the top ring over there. But before the koiva, by the way, let's not get confused. Above that is the koiva. But this is the highest ring is cartilage all the way around. The highest ring on the animal, or a person for that matter, yeah. The point is, the highest ring that surrounds the conus. And then above that, you have the koiva, the hat-shaped thing, which is the thyroid cartilage. Yeah.
So,
yeah,
it's not the highest thing.
So, Sherefet, doesn't do the entire one pipe, then it's possible?
No, so, okay, so what it is, no. So, as far as how much you need to shecht of the, very good. As far as how much you need to shecht of the windpipe, that we dealt with already in previous production, you have to shecht through the majority of it. In fact, you have actually now that you mention it, you have so, right.
No.
Here we're discussing as far as shechet. If there's a hole in it, not part of shechita, then how large does the hole need to be in order to make the animal shechet? You do have, mind you, you do have some of the Mefarshim who explain that the two definitions are the same. Whatever definition we're going to give for roiv over here also applies to roiv as far as shechita. Anyway, the point is that. So the point is, so you have like that thickness at one end, and then it's thinner at the other end, because all you have there is the strip of muscle that holds it closed. So, therefore, you have two different ways of defining what roiv is. So, that's the kama ruba. So the question is, what is the majority for this purpose? So, rav oma roiv oivya. Rav says it means the majority of its thickness. Va'amri la roiv chalala. Others say that Rav said it means the majority of the inside of it. Now, what does that mean? So Rashi starts by explaining like this. First of all, Rashi mentions an explanation that somebody wanted to say that roiv oivya means most of the thickness of the cartilage. Rashi says that can't possibly be what it means, because then it comes out, you'd be more machmer on the windpipe than you are on the esophagus. The esophagus, you need a hole in the actual thing, and here you're saying already cutting through the cartilage, even before you get to the actual windpipe itself, is enough to make it possible. So Rashi says that's not what it means. What it means is, we already said the fact that it says nikav, nikuvas haveshet, and psukas hagageret, which psukas implies a larger cut than nikuvas, implies that we have to be more makel on the corner than on the windpipe than we do on the vesh. Right, that's the point.
And what happens if you share between two cartilages then?
So fine, we talked about an earlier parrot. Maybe you should do that with Pila. We had Rashi, that was one explanation of Rashi's Asherchet Metzerchet Tabas, that it means ideally you should share between them, Rashi. But we talked about that, the halach is not like that. You can share in in one of the rings of cartilage. But that's not the point. Here we're dealing with trachea anyway. So the point is, Rashi says like this. If you take the point of roiv oivya, so it means you're counting the thickness of the cartilage on this side of it. You're also counting then, in other words, what you're doing is it's an oval. So to get roiv oivya, in other words, you're counting this, counts towards roiv oivya, and this meaning the cartilage. Therefore, you wind up, before you even reach half of the inside of the corner, you've already cut through the majority of the entire thing. Yes. Here, if you have...
What's your definition of the whole?
That's what we're saying. Roiv oivya. Roiv oivya would mean the majority of its thickness. If we say you start from here, then roiv oivya comes out over here, even though if you think of the inside of it, you haven't quite reached half yet. So roiv oiv.
The thickness is just the cartilage itself.
The thickness means, Rashi says, it doesn't just mean the cartilage itself. It means considering the entire width or the entire length, whatever, the entire axis, the entire major axis of the cone with the cartilage. And therefore, when you cut through the cartilage, at that point, let's say, so if you cut through the cartilage, you start cutting through the cone itself, you start cutting through the sides of the windpipe itself, you reach a point where you've reached roiv oivi, the majority of the thickness of the entire thing, but you haven't yet, the majority of the diameter of the entire thing, but you haven't yet reached roiv halola of the inside of it, because the inside of it, remember, you're cutting through a thicker thing over here. Yes, that's the point. In other words, here you have a thicker thing. Here it's thinner. It thins out over here.
What about the external diameter?
So you have the external diameter versus the internal diameter, right? So roiv oivya would be the external diameter. But amrila roiv halola. Others say the inside. Others say that it means the inside. The majority of the inside diameter. The internal diameter, meaning in other words, we ignore the cartilage for that purpose. So those are the two different versions.
Okay.
Those are the two different versions of what Rav said. So the Gemara tells, one time a case of, what was it?
Yeah, one time a case of
like this, where an animal's windpipe was cut, was brought before Rav. Yosef kabodiklav roiv oivya. So Rav is sitting and checking the roiv oivya, to check whether the majority of the outside diameter has been cut. Omrele Rav Kahana v'Rav Asi l'Rav. However, Rav Kahana and Rav Asi tell Rav, what are you doing? L'matonu Rabbeinu b'roiv halola. You, Rebbe, you yourself taught us that it's only the majority of the inside diameter.
This is cut as far as by an external thing that is...
Yeah, that's a cut. Yeah, exactly. We're not talking about it with cut as part of the shchita. Yeah, obviously, cutting during the shchita is another matter. Obviously, it has to be, yeah.
Trachea.
Yeah.
So
that's the same machloikus. Then you'd have whether roiv oivya or roiv halala, whether that's the key thing. Yeah. But then that's it.
It would be
as long as you have a suffix in trefa, then the animal is in, and the animal is traced. Whenever you have a suffix in shchita, the animal is traced because.
Then it would be okay, but it's all
made by chalup. Well, if it's made by chalup, that's part of the shchitza process. You have to make sure that you cut the majority, right? Yeah.
So,
with
either one.
So Rav is checking the external. And Rav Kahana and Rav Asi point out to him that, wait a minute, you yourself taught us you're supposed to measure the inside. So he himself apparently wasn't sure. Shadre l'kamei the Rav Abachana. So Rav. He wasn't sure. Well, he wasn't sure what the correct halacha would be. Look, we had two opinions of what Rav himself said. Roiv oivya, roiv halala. So yeah, maybe he wasn't sure what the actual bottom line halacha should be. Anyway, shadri l'kamei de Rav Abachana. So Rav sent the animal to Rav Abachana to ask him what the halacha is. By the way, it's very possible that. It's not supposed to be Rabba Bar Chana over here. He's actually from the next generation, but rather Rabba Bar Chana, who is Rav's cousin. He's from the same generation as him. Okay, anyway. Bodka Baroiv Chalala. So Rabba Bar Chana checks to see whether it was the inner diameter of the diameter of the Kona itself from the inside, not including the cartilage. That, most of it was cut. and he found it wasn't ba'akshara, so he declared it kosher. The Rav had a suffix on it, but the Rabba Bachana, or Rabba Bachana, whatever, declared it kosher. The Zavon Mino, but Tzlaiso Isiri Pshiti Vitra. And then he went up, and then he went ahead to show that he, to demonstrate that he showed, that he knows that it's kosher, he bought 13 plain Isiras worth of meat from it. Rashi explains, Isiri Pshiti, or you have the famous thing that you have in a number of places in Shas, that you have Sela Tsuri and Sela Medina. You have a Sela from the city of Tsur that was almost pure silver. And then you have Sela Medina where like 1/8 of it was silver and the rest was copper. So Isiri Pshiti means plain Isiri, means a Sela Medina. So he bought
copper.
Yeah, so it's mostly copper, a little bit of silver. It's worth 1/8 of a Sela Tsuri. So whatever, he bought 13 plain Isiras worth of meat from this animal.
Within a large portion.
Yeah. So the question is, v'heichi ovid hochi, how could Rabba Baba Chana do that? V'atanya, we learn in a braisa, chocham shetime, if one rav says that a certain case is tome, ein chaveir rashoi latar, then another rav is not allowed to declare it tahor. Osar, if one chocham says that it's osar, ein chaveir rashoi lahatar, then the other tamar chocham is not allowed to declare. No, it's in everything. In everything, you know, whenever you have a shaila by a rav, you can't go for them shopping. Yeah, it's a general principle. Yeah. No. Now, what it doesn't make a difference what chelik or shulchan aruch the pashas not. Now, one thing, yeah, I mean there are exceptions to it. If you tell the first rav what the first, if you tell the second rav what the first one said, then that's a little different. But still, it's a braisa. Yeah, I mean, it's a braisa. So over here, if Rav declared that it was treif, then how could Rav Baba Chana say that's kosher and even eat from it? The answer is shiny hocha. The Rav like also made. So okay, but it's different over here. Rav didn't actually say it's osir. He had a question. Yeah, he thought to check Barov Ovia, which would make it treif. Rav Kahana and Rav Asi are telling him you should be makel and check Barov Hakefa, Barov Chalala rather. So he himself, yeah. So fine. Okay, so the question is, still, we have another problem with it. The kivan de ori b'chacham. Okay, but we have another problem with it. Since Rav is looking into the psak on it and has a suffix, whether it's also or mutter, heichi ochamina. How could Rav Baba Chana eat from it? V'haksiv, we have a pasuk from Yechezkel. We dealt with this at the end of the previous parak.
What's the question?
The question is now like this. Fine. Rav Baba Chana is entitled to declare this animal kosher because Rav didn't actually say in so many words that it's treif. He started thinking that it was treif, but he wasn't sure. But now the question is, given that there was a suffix on it, then a Baal Nefesh should not be eating from such meat. Because not Rav didn't make a decision, but the very fact that there was a shayla, as we learned in the previous parak, a shayla mach treif. And we see from Yechezkel that you're not supposed to do that. So fine, it would be one thing if Rav Baba Chana declared it kosher and said other people can eat it, but that he himself is buying meat from it and eating it, how could that be? V'haksiv, you have the pasuk that Yechezkel says to Hashem, when Hashem tells him to take a mixture of various grains and beans and whatever and make himself a bread, a type of bread, and eat it while he's play-acting the siege of Yerushalayim and lying on this side and on that side and whatever. And Hashem tells him to take this mixture of peas and beans and grains and whatever. This is Ezekiel bread that you find, unpleasant food, and bake it over a fire made with human waste, with human dung. So Yechezkel says, "V'oimar, aha, Hashem alekim." I said, "Whoa, Hashem alekim, accept my tefillah." Hine nafshi lo metuma. Look, my nefesh, I myself have never become tamei. Unveilo treifa lo chalti min urai v'adata. I never ate from my youngest days until now. I never ate neveilo or treifa. And there never came meat of piggle in my mouth. And he said it in the previous parak. We had back on Lama Zayin. We said the Gemara is assuming we can't just say that Yechezkel is saying I never did any averus because what's a chiddush? Of course he's a navi, he's a tzaddik. Of course he didn't do actual averus like eating the veil or treif or a piggle. So it has to mean that he's talking about like a finer thing. In each of these things, as I said, there's like a spectrum for each one where you have at one end of it is the actual gross avera, and then at the other end of it is some more dachlistic thing to be careful of. Namely, he says, I never became Tomei. Not just he didn't become Tomei in the simple sense, he's a Kohen, he's not supposed to. It means, it means I didn't have machshavas, zoris, by day that would cause me to have keri, that would cause me to become Tomei, to become a Baal Keri that night. Now, technically, Tosfos points out over there, really nobody is allowed to, but the fact is, it's very hard. The average person has to hura aveda. So Yechezkel was saying on himself to Hashem that I was careful even beyond the what most people figure they're capable of.
Hashem helped him to.
Okay, Hashem helped him. That's how it always is. Okay, we're not saying he did it, but the fact is that Haboli Tire Messiah knows it. He's saying I made every effort to be a tire. Yes, of course I had Hashem's help, but yeah. Okay. And Unvelo Trefa Loyachalti, what does he mean when he says I didn't eat Nevelo Trefa? Again, it doesn't mean in the simple sense. It means Shaloyachalti Besar Kois Kois Me Olam. I never ate meat from an animal about which people would say shecht it quickly. Kois means shecht. Okay. Shecht it quickly before it dies, meaning a misopenis. That's where we learned about it on the previous Pesach. Yeah. V'lebov api v'sav pigul. I mean, he says, there never came into my mouth meat of pigul. What does that mean?
What happens is if an animal is about to die, it's not shecht yet, but some people will go, oh, let's shecht it really quick before it becomes
true. Right.
But it's still online.
So he never did that.
Right. Right. Means I never ate from an animal about which a chacham had to pass him, whether it's kosher or not, because a shayla machzeh. The very fact that there was a shayla on it makes it. In fact, Marashah says that's a comparison to pigul. Pigul is a person has a machshava during the bringing of the korban that makes it possible. Here, the chacham had a machshava. This might be possible. It might be chay. Therefore, that makes it to a certain extent, yes.
You want to repeat
the same thing we wrote before. Yeah, well, okay, it does that sometimes. Mishum Rav Nachman, because it's in a different context. Before we were focusing on the Sar Kois, and Mr. Kenneth, here we're focusing on Hod of a Chacham, on the last part. Okay. Mishum Rav Nachman, in the name of Rav Nachman, they said a different explanation of that last one. Shalai Achalti Mibahema Shalai Humu Matneseha. Yechezkel was saying, I never ate from an animal where the Matnes Kahuna, the Zroya L'chayayim V'keva, were not taken off to give to the Kohen, even though he himself was a Kohen, and he could, right? The point being, in other words, we see from Yechezkel that it's a Midas Chassidus to not eat from an animal on which there was a Shaila. But therefore, how is Rabbi Balachana eating from this meat that had a Shaila on it? The answer is Hanimili Milsa Detalia Besvara. Yes, but that rule only applies when the Chacham Psak eventually depends on Svara. Because after all, you could have, okay, he had a Svara, but okay, what if he misunderstood the situation a little bit? Rashi gives some examples that we're gonna have later on in our parish when we start talking about Jinim about trephus of the lungs. So for example, you have a case where you have, let's say, a blister on one area of the lung, and you compare it to a different animal's lung to see whether it's a blister that would make a treif or not. Okay, but it's a judgment call. It could easily be that maybe Taka, you didn't judge it correctly. Another example Rashi mentions is you have discolorations on the lung. Again, you have a very fine distinction between one color and another. So that's the kind of thing that a Baal Nefesh like Yechezkel wouldn't eat from it. As opposed to Rav Baba Chana Agmore Samach, as opposed to Rav Baba Chana is relying on what he learned from his Rebbe. That definitely Tsukas Agaderes means Beroiv Chalala, no question about it, it's not a judgment call, therefore even Yechezkel would be comfortable eating from such an animal, and therefore so would Rav Baba Chana. Because there's a difference between something that depends on a judgment call, where the judgment may or may not have been correct. It's very objective that it's clearly Roiv Chalala, because that's how we learned Chesed Ebbe. Right.
Objective, you would agree with Yechezkel.
Right, right.
Why is it so objective?
Because he learned from his Rebbe that's Roiv Chalala, so therefore that's it. So therefore all you have to do is check the inner circumference, see if it's 50% or not, and there you are.
But it's easy to assess,
but the point is we know the din. There's no reason to have a suffix that it might have been Roiv Ovia, as Rav thought originally. When you ask the Rav Shaila, if it's something that he has clear, that's clear in Shulchan Aruch, then there's no reason to be machmer and not eat from it. But if it's something where you have, for example, different opinions of post-skim, or where you have to make a judgment call by comparing one thing to another, yeah, okay. Fine, but now we have another question. But people claim Mishum Chashta. Okay, isn't there another reason why Rav Baba Chana should not be buying meat from this animal? Shouldn't there be a problem of chashad that people are going to suspect you declared this animal kosher in order that, and then that way, now the butcher is going to be very happy. He doesn't have to lose the whole thing. Therefore, he's giving you a discount on the meat. So maybe, therefore, you shouldn't be buying from that. Netanya is in fact alone in a brisa. Donna Sadin, if a person, if a dying paskin of din Torah, zikav chiyev kimi v'tihir, he declares one person innocent and the other one liable. No, zikav, whatever, not innocent, but whatever, not liable to pay, and the other one liable to pay. Kimi v'tihir, he says one is tame, one is tahar. Also v'hifkir, he says one thing is also, another thing is mutter. V'chein ha'edim shehi'idu, the same thing as far as edim who testified about a case. Or something, let's say, for example, Rashi says about a field or something that belongs to Pliny, kulan rashoyin l'kach, they're later on allowed to buy that same thing. However, aval amru chachamim, but the chachamim said it, maybe it's better not to do that. Harchik mina kir umina doimaloi, stay away from anything ugly or anything similar to being ugly. So like this, the dayan or the aid, people are going to think that he's biased, that he gave, that maybe he judged in this way, that Reuven owns this thing rather than Shimon, in order that now, later on, Reuven owes him a favor, and now he'll sell it to him at a discount. The answer is, Hanimili midid mazbin mishuma. The difference is, that's only something that you're buying based on an estimate. What you have, there's not a fixed price for it, so you can have it again. Hocha maskala mocha. Over here, what it is you buy meat by weight. So therefore, it's very clear. Everybody can see the amount that was weighed out for him, and they know the price of meat. So therefore, they know, they can see he wasn't being given any discount. In fact, here's an example. The weighing showed that he wasn't getting any discount. Therefore, there's no reason for him not to buy.
Price for meat is $10 a pound.
Yeah, and he got X number of pounds.
That's it.
Okay. Ki ha de Rabba, as we have the example of Rabba, or really it's supposed to be Rava, it says on the side, Shara Treifa, one time, Rava, Paskin, also on a case of Treifa, that's Mutter, Vizavan Mina Bisra, and then later on he bought meat from that same animal. Obviously, it must have been also the case where it was based on a Kabbalah from his Rebbeim rather than Savara, because otherwise he would have been Machmer. Anyway, Omrele Bas Rav Chista, so the daughter of Rav Chista, who was Rava's wife, says to him, is that the right thing to do? Abba Shari Buch Rav Leizavan Mina Bisra. You should know my father, Rav Chista, who was a Kohen, he would be master of Bechor. If somebody came to him with a Bechor that had a possible mum, he would look it over and declare and see whether it's a mum or not and say that it's mutter. But then he wouldn't buy meat from that animal because of chashad. So what are you doing buying meat from this animal that you yourself fasting on? Then Allah, so he answers like this, Hani mili buchra, yes, but that's only the case with a Bechor, because a Bechor is a special case. The Ashuma Mizdaban, meat of a Bechor can only be sold by estimate. Even nowadays, that was in the times of the best method, you would bring the Bechor as a carbon anyway, but even a Bechor Baal Mum, when you shecht it, there are certain dinim that apply to it that don't apply to most other ex-Kodshim, to most other Psula Mokdashim, and one of them is you're not allowed to sell the meat by weight. You're only allowed to sell it by estimate. So therefore, by estimate, you don't have an actual weight. So therefore, because it's bizoyan for it, because the Bechor, and it still has a certain residual kedusha. Yeah, it still has a certain residual kedusha.
From the estimate, if you can't sell by weight, because it's a bizoyan.
That's true. So what it is other psulei amukdashin, you are allowed to weigh them out because the money that you get from that is going to go to hekdash anyway. As opposed to over here, the bechor belongs to the kohen, so therefore the hekdash is not getting any benefit out of it being sold by weight, so you can't do that. So therefore, so Rava is telling his wife, your father wouldn't eat from the bechor because their taka is a problem of chashad. Since you can't sell it by exact weight, people would think maybe he got a discount. Over here, the weight shows. Over here, it's a regular animal. You can weigh it out, so people can see how much was weighed out to me, and they can see there were no discounts. By the way, Rashi makes a side point over here that Rav Chista was a kohen, which the Marsha asked, what's the point of it? I mean, the halacha is that Yisrael is allowed to eat from Bechor also. So one thing he points out is that even if we wanted to say that Rav Chista was going to be, we might argue if Rav Chista hadn't been a Kohen, you could say, okay, he didn't buy from it because he wanted to be machmer on himself, that a Yisrael should eat it only if he's invited to by the Kohen or whatever, but since he himself is a Kohen, obviously that's not the issue. So therefore his daughter is saying to Rava, obviously the only reason he didn't buy from it is because of chashad, and Rava explains, so yes, but there's a difference between a bechor that's sold by estimate versus a regular animal that's sold by weight. Okay. And he continues, my ikka. So what are you going to tell?
Can be eaten by Israel.
So the halacha is that a the Yisrael himself can't just take it and eat it, but a Kohen who has a Bechorah that he shefted, he can invite over a Yid to join in the meal.
You have to eat it at the table of a
Kohen. I don't necessarily have the table of a Kohen, but at least with the permission. Like, I don't know, when we learn the Sefer Bechorah, which is the next Sefer after that, after this, Bez Hashem, we'll learn these in him in detail. Okay. So he continues, my Ikka, so what are you going to argue? The other problem would be Mishum Umtza Mal Yisrael. The fact that it was an extra good cut of meat, that's nothing. They always sell me the best cuts of meat. They always have, the butchers over here always have derecherets for meat, and they sell me the best piece of meat. So therefore, with that, there's no problem of chashad that anybody's going to think that that because I was machshir this animal for him, therefore he's giving me a break, he's giving me better meat, because the better meat I always get anyway, and a break in the price, you can see it was weighed out and everybody can see there wasn't any. Okay. More on this topic, a little piece of our God's God on this topic. Amr of Chista, a Zehu Talmud Chacham, what is the definition of a Talmud Chacham, which the relevance of that in particular Tosfos says is you have a Gemara in Bava Metzia, in Eilat Metzias, that says that even though usually you have to ask a person for a simon before you return him a lost object, we say over there a Talmud Chacham, you can return him something but Tvius Ayin, just if he says I recognize it, he may not have any specific simon, but he just recognizes it on sight. So what's the definition of a Talmud Chacham? For that purpose, this is somebody who sees a trefa for himself. So Rashi explains what that means is, suppose he has an animal of his own, he has a suffix trefa, there's reasons to be master, there's reasons to after it, he won't worry about the financial loss, he'll go ahead and after it. And then that shows that he's not greedy for money, because obviously he doesn't mind the big financial loss himself. The point is, therefore, we can return him an Aveda to be a Tzayin, because that's the
Right. You have to be a Talmud Chacham to see a moon, to recognize the moon.
Says this is a Talmud Chacham.
The definition of a Talmud Chacham for this purpose, as Tosfos is saying, Zehoroya, Trefa Lasma, is where he sees a Trefa for himself, and he knows that there's reasons, that there might be reasons to be master it, there might be reasons not to be, but he goes ahead and says, I'm going to be on the safe side, I'm declaring a Trefa. I'm not taking any chances. I'm not saying yes, but I'm going to lose a lot of money.
I'll be master somebody else either.
What?
We must have somebody else.
No, no, no. That's the thing. He himself will take the loss. He'll consider it safer. He'll sell it to Goyim. He'll throw it to dogs. Whatever.
He won't sell it to another East.
Why would he sell it to? It's already checked. Yeah, no. If he's declaring it safer, I mean, he'll take the loss rather than taking the chance of being martial another year. Yeah.
What were you going to say?
I said it's much more difficult to be martial than to be martial. Here we should be emphasizing the fact that it's.
So one second. You have a good point, and Marshall says something similar about that, right? Okay, yeah.
So I don't care, but the Talmud Chacham, if he recognizes a mom, okay, fine. But like if he just, there will be a righteous person if he was just okay, forgo the money.
Right, but that's what we're saying. The definition of therefore, that's what we're saying.
Talmud Chacham, someone like he's through the prayer. A Talmud Chacham could be a very greedy person, too.
Well, that's true, but then he wouldn't be the kind that you would return him an Aveda to be a Zion. Here we're saying the definition of it. Obviously, we mean he has to know the halachas. We're not just saying he's like one of those Amir Oretz, you know, they see any tiny thing and they're Amir Oretz chosid after all. No, we're talking about a person who knows the halachas. He has, actually says, he can find a reason to be master this, he can find a reason to after it, but he says that he's going to go ahead and master it. Marshall gives a different explanation, actually. Marshall says the vote is, Haroya Tshefel Asmo basically means that. He doesn't trust other people as far as traces. If somebody else says, you know, there was a suffix over here, but I found that it was kosher, then he won't rely on that. He'll still be machmer and then consider it for himself.
Years ago, you have to burn them. They will eat that.
Wait. Okay. The Omer of Chista, also of Chista says, Ezehu Soinim Atonatich, yeah? What is the definition? You have a pasuk that says a person who hates gifts will live long. What is the definition of that? Also, Zeharoya Trefa La'asmai, also somebody who sees a Trefa for himself. So according to Rashi, the vote is, if he's obviously not so concerned about his own loss of money, then by the same logic, he's not going to be greedy for other people's gifts. So he's certainly Soinim Matonis from other people if he's not even concerned about a financial loss of his own. Marsha says the vote is that because he doesn't trust other people's cash was so easily, therefore he's not going to want to be invited out to them a lot. So he's Soinim Matonis. He doesn't like to be given free gifts of food. Then you're, yes. Good question. I'm not sure. But, Also, Santa Matana,
if you turned on a gift from someone else, that will give you a gift as well.
Could be. Marshal,
so what's
plain meaning? Exactly what it means. So in a matron, it's a person who hates gifts. Yeah, yeah, will live.
Because
I don't know. I don't know what the actual connection is.
Wait, so,
okay.
But does it apply to knowing what the gift would have been?
I don't know. However, okay, I'll tell you, Ben Yehoyada has an interesting vote on this. I mean, we have to go on, but I'll tell you, Ben Yehoyada has an interesting vote on it. He says like this: you have, the fact of the matter is, you have Tamid Chachamim who do have to accept gifts from people. You have Tamid Chachamim who can't make ends meet, and of necessity they have to be supported by the Sibur, Kolol Nix, or whatever. So how do you know what level they're on? If we see that they're Roya Trey Falasmo, then that shows they're not accepting the gifts because they want them, because they're greedy for them. They're accepting them basically because they're doing it in order to be able to learn Torah better. So they're still in the category of Sona Matonis Yechia. They are getting gifts, but not because they like the gifts themselves, but rather they hate to take it, but they understand that they have to take it in order to be able to learn Torah. Yeah. Then you're
Isn't there, I don't know who said it, but that you shouldn't collect
tzedakah to learn Torah. The Rambam writes that's true, but in most generations since the Rambam, it hasn't been like that. The fact is, you have people who learn in Karlo and are supported.
Yeah, but they're not fundraising for themselves.
Okay, same difference, though. They're still taking from the Sibur. If a person can, but you have Rishonim and Acharonim. You have Rishonim and Acharonim talk about that. They say, you're right, of course, ideally the Rambam's right. A person should work and support themselves and learn Torah. However, Lamaisa, the Rishonim and Acharonim say, if you did that, there'd be very few Tamar Chachamim. So therefore, of necessity...
There's nothing worse than...
Okay, but nevertheless, the fact...
Fine.
Okay, there is that. That's the Rambam's shita. But again, I'm telling you, the Rambam is one Rishon, and as great a Rishon he is, there are other Rishonim who disagree with him and say that the fact of the matter is the situation in their times and now even today makes it necessary.
The author of his father would never.
Okay. That's true also.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's go on. Okay, let's go on.
So who said the same thing?
So what do you mean, who said the same thing? I don't know who said the same. I'm saying that there are Rishonim who disagree with him.
The Alter Rebbe said that.
I don't know.
The Alter Rebbe's father
worked for a living rather than having to take tzedakah, right? In every generation, you always had people like that who would try to be machmir on themselves and not have to take money from other people. I don't know if we did. Okay. Anyway, let's go on. Okay. The Amr of Chis. Okay. Yeah, sorry. Dorash Marzutra Mishmeid Rav Chista. Kol mi shekoreh v'shoyneh, somebody who reads, meaning you know he learns Tanakh, v'shoyneh, and he learns Mishnayot, v'royeh trefa l'asmo, he's able to find a trefa for himself, as we said, that, you know, he's not worried if he finds a trefa. That if he finds an animal that is his trefa, he's not worried. He'll be machmir on himself. V'shimish tamar chachamim, and he serves tamar chachamim, meaning he stays by them in order to learn the reasons behind the Mishnayos, which is basically the framework of the Gemara. Shimish tamar chachamim. He serves tamar chachamim, which the Gemara explains in Brachas. Zor lo shimusha yosim alimuda. Serving a tamar chacham because you actually stay with him all the time and learn not only from you learn from him, but you also learn from his ma'isim and whatever is even greater than just learning Torah. All of our cost of Omer. On such a person, the pasuk says, "Yigia kapechas yisoichol." When you eat the hard work of your hands, ashrecha b'toyva. You're happy and it'll be good for you. Rav Zvid says, on top of that, it means that he's zoicha to have the best of both worlds, this world and the next world. Ashrecha ba'olam hazeh v'toyva l'olam haba.
So yigia kapecha is figuratively taken here.
Yeah.
So the mission
actually, well, you know what? Yes and no. Marsha actually says an interesting thing on it. We just said Haroya Shreita La'asma is a big madrega.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, then you have somebody beyond that. You have, there's a person who's machmir, because he says, okay, there's a reason to be machmir, there's a reason to after, but I'm going to be on the safe side, I'm going to after it. But then you have, and this answers your question, you have the person who's shimish, tamar chachamim, and finds that there are actual solid reasons to be master it, and therefore he says, in that case, then I'll be master it. Then he's enjoying Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba because he actually gets to eat from it in Olam Hazeh, and he also has the tzchar for Olam Haba. So therefore, so Marshal says that's what the Gemara is implying is that's an even higher madrega than Haroya Tzrei Falasma. Yeah. So that answers your question. Okay. More on this topic of taking gifts or not taking gifts. Rabbi Lazar, if you have a mashadri lemi bein nasi amidi, Rabbi Lazar, when they would send him something from the household of the nasi in Eretz Yisrael, lo shokil, he wouldn't take it because so much on his yichid, he didn't want to take gifts. And if they invited him to a meal, he also wouldn't go. Omar, because he would say, Rebbe, don't you want me to continue living? If I take gifts from you, or gifts of food, or being invited, or whatever, yeah. On the other hand, Reb Zeira kina shadri leilo shokir. Now, Reb Zeira did a little differently. When they sent him gifts, Hitaka wouldn't take them either, for the same reason. But if they invited him for a meal, then he would go. What about not taking the gift? Omar, because he said, they're not inviting me because they want me to take from them. It's just the opposite. They're getting covered from the fact that I'm willing to accept their invitation, so the hana is theirs. The hana is not mine. Now, so Chassam Sofer says, so in that case, why did Rav Elazar not do like that? And he says the reason is because Rav Elazar, we find in other Gemaras, was very, very poor. So therefore, the household of the Nasi wouldn't have any covered from him eating by them because they looked at the Chassonius, whether he's rich or not. As opposed to Rav Zeira, was if not rich, at least if he wasn't rich, at least he was comfortable, so therefore they could have, therefore they could, yeah.
The same thing, the fact that he would accept the Matana, he was covered for them. But the fact is, after the 10th and 1, Matana refused it. Why would people
I don't know. They kept on trying, maybe. I don't know.
They gave him something nicer.
The right way to do for each individual person is to ask their mashpia. As far as matanis, I mean, other things being equal, you shouldn't be taking. But it depends, you know. Again, sometimes there's the idea that the giver of the matana gets more hana out of it than the receiver of it. So that's sometimes the case by case thing.
No, sure.
Okay. But again, it also depends whether the person needs it in order to be able to continue learning or not. Okay.
So, and people like Kedusha, a popular person, a big rabbi, and she gets more than what they take.
Yeah,
so
right.
Practice of speaking that you're not supposed to go and eat outside your home.
No, we're not saying that because we're saying that. First of all, we're talking a certain level of Talmud Chacham. We're not necessarily talking about the average person. In fact, by the way, in Shulchan Aruch, for various purposes, it mentions that for various dinim, we actually don't have any Talmud Chacham nowadays. As far as certain dinim, for example, the dinim of Baza Talmud Chacham, that he has to pay a litra zav, whatever. Anyway,
that's the principle. Where regardless if he's Talmud Chacham or not. So the application, I don't know.
It's a case by case thing, I guess. All right, let's go on. Omer of Yehuda, Omer Rav. Getting back now to the question of, we said in the Mishnah that if the windpipe has a hole in it, we said that only if the hole is most of the way around it, is it possible, and that is it treif, and that led us into the discussion we just had. Is it roiv ovia, the outer diameter, or most of the inner diameter? And we said the halacha is the inner diameter. Okay. So now, Amun of Yehuda Amar Rab. Nikva kinofa. What happens if there are holes in the windpipe like a sieve? You have a hole here, a hole here, a hole here. You just have a bunch of small holes next to each other.
Kinofa
means like a sieve. Like a sieve.
A sieve.
Like you sift flour with. Yeah, so it has a bunch of holes in it. So then mitstarsim l'ruba. The holes combine together to make roiv. If the total length of all the holes together were to be the majority of the way around the corner, then the animal is straight.
That means the whole circle.
Means a whole circle. Yeah. You would count them up. You actually have some of the poskim understand that when what you would actually have is you wouldn't just count the holes themselves. You would some of the Mephoshim explain, you also count actually the intact area between the holes, especially if that intact area is smaller than the holes themselves. So then, in other words, then that's much more of a chumra, of course, because you don't just...
The distance between two holes?
Yeah, in other words, if you have a bunch of holes, where let's say each hole is, each hole is, let's say, a quarter of an inch in size, and the space between one and the next is only an eighth of an inch, then you'd count that as well. Most of Rabbi Yemias, so Rabbi Yemias says, I have a contradiction to that. We learned at the beginning of the parak, we talked about there are cases where you have parts of a skeleton that are not metame ba'oil. Usually we said a skeleton of a person or enough bones of a person are metame b'maga b'masa uva oil, if a person is under the same oil as them or overhangs them or they overhang him or whatever. So, but you have a case over there that with a skull, not necessarily is it metame b'oil, it depends, over gugolos shiyeshba nekev echad aruch. So earlier in that same Mishnah, it talks about you have actually machlokas the shamai betilo. If you have one big hole in the skull, how large a hole does it have to be that the skull is not matana the oil anymore? So you have the shamai and betilo. The shamai says over there that it would be a hole the size of the drill that doctors use. Like doctors in those days use a drill sometimes to drill into the skull. Vitillo says, it's the amount that if you took that amount of skull out of a person, then it would kill him. So now, with a skull after the person's dead, if a piece is missing from that size, then it's not matame. Continues the Mishnah, Ovogogolos, Sheyesh ben Nekev Echad Aruch, if you have a skull that has a long hole in it, in other words, it's not a round hole, but a long hole, like a slot, or Afilu Yesh ben Nekev Harbe, or even if it has many holes in it, they all together add up to the size of this drill that the Shammai is talking about. By the way, Tosfos points out, the halacha is not like the Shammai, but we're mentioning the drill only because that's a defined thing, as opposed to the civil thing is not really a clearly defined measure. Anyway, the point is that Alma, kiven de shiure maloy makdeach, since the amount of a skull that has to be missing, that then it's not matame ba'oil anymore, we're saying, according to Beis Shammai, is the size of the drill hole, therefore, when we have smaller holes, what do? We figure out, do they add up to the size of the drill hole? So again, if you have a bunch of small holes, we look at the size of the holes and add them together. If we're talking about a long hole, same thing, we measure the size of that long hole, the size of that slot, we see if that's the same area as the Maloy Makdeach, and then if yes, it's safe. If yes, then the skull is not Matama Ba'oil. If not, then it is. Hachinami, so the same thing over here, says Rabbi Yirmiyah. Now it's true. We learned in our Mishnah, and we said in the Braisa at the beginning, that when it comes to the windpipe, the amount that makes it safe, if it's cut, is Rubai. However, there's a different kind of thing. There's two different things. There's cut, and then there's missing, which is called Chisarin. And the Mishnah later on, in the next Mishnah in our Perek, on Daf Mandalas, says that if you have a piece of the windpipe missing, then it's a different amount that makes it trace. Then if Maloy Iser, then it's the size of an Iser, which is a type of coin.
How big is that?
So the poskim aren't clear exactly on what the size of it is, although I think the Rashba points out that based on our Gemara over here and based on other Gemaras, it seems it has to be less than half the size of the windpipe. The point is that so there it's not just a matter of roi, there it's a matter of iser. So hochinami, so in our case over here, kiven de shiure ki iser, we're talking about holes where apparently something of the kana is actually missing. So why are you telling me you look whether they add up to roi? Like iser mitzvah, then they should add up to the size of an iser, because that's the size of a hole that if it's missing that makes the animal trace. So the Gemara says, Ishtemitze, Rabbi Yirmiyah, when he asked this question, he forgot ha de omer ab chel by omer ab chama baguria omer rab. That, there's a difference. Nikovim sheyesh behen chisara and mitzar from the chisar. It's true, there's a difference whether there's actually something missing there. Now you can have, and we all know, there's a hole, you can have a hole where some substance is actually missing, like the kind that you punch out with a hole puncher, let's say. And then you can have this kind of hole where there's no actual substance missing. You have like a needle was stuck in, the tissue was moved this way and that by the point of the needle, but none of it is actually missing.
There's a hole where underneath nothing is missing, you say?
Not underneath. Think of it. You can make a hole in a piece of paper, right? And nothing will be missing of the paper. You just have a hole over there because you have the little bit of paper. If you look at it under a microscope, you'll see that where before the paper was flat, you'll see now it's bent outward.
Oh, right.
Yeah, as opposed to you can have a hole where some substance. Yeah, flat, basically.
Well,
not quite a flat, actually. A flat we're actually going to talk about soon. Here we're talking about, effectively it's like a flat, but it's too small to see, basically. There's a difference between a flat that's too small to see. Again, try it at home. Take a piece of paper, stick a needle through it. You're not going to see any flaps on the other side, but the fact is, none of the actual paper is missing. So the same thing over here.
If a needle through a paper, there's going to be a hole.
No, there's going to be a hole, but that doesn't mean any of the actual paper substance is missing.
Pushed aside.
It's too small. Okay. Yeah.
Huh?
Especially by me, yeah. So therefore, so rekavim sheyesh behen chisaron, yes, if the holes are the kind of holes where some actual substance of the kana is missing, mitzarsim l'keister, then yes, they do add up to an ister, and if you have the total amount of them as an ister, then the animal is traced. V'shein behen chisaron, if they're holes where the kind where nothing is missing, mitzarsim l'ruba, then they add up to roi. So yes, so there is that actual distinction. So Tosafot says, Rav Yirmiyah had thought that we're talking about Nekavim, we're talking about halls where there is Chisaron, and he thought that we're saying that they add up to those. But now we're saying that no, halls that where there's no Chisaron, you're right, those halls where there's no Chisaron, where there is a Chisaron, add up to an Isser. Only if there's no Chisaron do we talk about Rav and not Rav.
So less than an isser is missing
is not trace. Right. And if we're not talking about things missing, we're just talking about it cut. Yeah. Okay. Amar Rav Abachana, Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi. Here's another din in that connection. Nislahen mena ritsua. What about if a strip of the corner was removed? So here we were talking about like there were a bunch of small round holes, let's say. Now what if you have a long strip that is removed? A swap, basically. So then the tzarefes, like the isser, same idea. You figure out whether the area of that swap is equal to the size of an isser or greater, and if it is, the animal's safe, and if not, then not.
What if it's naturally missing?
Yes, could be natural. Well, it could be naturally missing. It could be that it was cut out. It doesn't really matter. Again, as I said at the beginning of the parak, in a modern veterinarian or a modern doctor or whatever, if he's brought somebody with holes in his corner, he's going to start checking what caused them. Is it infection? Is it bullets? Is it this? Is it that? Halacha, for the most part, doesn't care about that. Yeah. Bar minei Rav Yitzchok ben Nachmeni mirav Yishur ben Levi. Nikva kinofa mahu. So he asked him a similar question like we had before. What if there's holes in it like a sieve, a bunch of small holes next to each other? Amalei, so Rav Yishur ben Levi answers him. Harei omru nekavim sheyesh ben chisaron mitzarfim lekeiser. We just said, if the holes have actual substance missing, then you figure out whether the total area of them adds up to an iser. V'shein ben chisaron mitzarfim leruvah. If there's nothing missing, then we look and see whether it adds up to roiv. Again, in both of these cases, you have meforshim and you have poskim who say that it's not just then we don't just look at the holes, then we look at the intact area between them as well to see whether it all adds up. Okay.
But
well,
the hole is still there. I mean,
yes,
the hole is.
That piece that goes out is
hanging down.
Not necessarily. You can have where a piece is taken out and it's gone.
And,
yeah.
And if it's not taken out, what does it do with?
There's three possibilities. So far we've dealt with two of them. You can have where a piece is cut out and is actually missing. You can have a case where there's a hole but nothing's missing, that the tissue is just pushed to the side. Compressed, basically, and then you can have, which the Gemara is going to talk about in a minute, you can have a case where it's hanging off one end, like a door.
Okay, yeah.
That's the third possibility. We'll get to that in a minute. Okay. But, by the way,
it's also recognized in medicine.
Okay. But, the next question is, what about when it comes to a bird? Now, a bird's windpipe is much smaller than an animal's windpipe, so you can't use the size of an isser. That would be bigger than the windpipe. So what do? So Rav Yitzchok Bar Nachmeni says, Rav Elazar, explain to me what you do is like this. In the kaploi, you fold up the part that has the holes in it, and you put it on top of the kone. In other words, Rashi describes what you do is basically like this. You make a cut. So you have an area in the kone that has a bunch of holes in it, like over here. So what you do is you make like a U-shaped cut around there. So it's attached to the corner at one end. The other three sides are cut away. Then what you do is you take that flap and fold it down over the open side of the corner. That flap that has all the holes in it, you fold it down over the open side of the corner. So again, you started out, you had a piece of the corner that had holes in it. So you make that piece into a flap. You cut around three sides of it, leave the one side of it attached to the corner, cut through the rest of the corner at that point. So now you have a flap sticking out. You take that flap and fold it over onto the exposed end of the corner. And then you see, is it a majority? If that area with the holes covers most of the corner, trefa, the imlav trefa, and if not, then it's kosher. So this is an example. Because that's the easy way to measure it, basically. But that also is, that Rashi points out over here that This is the idea, is because the holes are so close together, therefore you count the intact area between the holes as well, count towards the total area of holes. Okay. The Omer HaPapa, so the Papa says, the Simonach, a way to remember how to do this, Nafya. Think of how a sieve is made in the first place. What do? Rashi describes, you have like a frame, you have a frame made of wood or metal or what have you, and then you stretch out hairs. Rashi describes that you use hairs from the tail of a horse, and you stretch them out over the frame. So similarly to you, you're taking the part with the holes and like putting it over the open side of the kohanim. So you're like, so to speak, like you're making as if like you're making a sieve out of it. Okay. What about the next case? Nifchas HaKedelas. What about if you have a piece that's cut out and is hanging like a door? So like that, you have a flap. You have the kohanim before, you're talking about you make a flap after the fact in order to check.
Here we're talking about just before. Why don't you just cut the piece off and just measure it towards the diameter? Why do you have to leave one?
Because you leave one end of it hanging, and that way you're sure that you're measuring it accurately. Otherwise, you're not sure. You may move it around a little bit after that. Fine. Okay, nifchas HaKedelas. So now what do you do if you have a piece that's cut out, like a flap over here?
Kedelas
is like a door. So it's hanging from one side.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's hanging from one that's injured, yeah. Right there.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So nifchas HaKedelas, Amar of Nachman, Kedesh Yikonis Iso the Rosbay. In that case, the din would be, when would it be chased? If an Iser is able to go in within the width. Which means, in other words, Rashi explains, in the previous case, we were talking about all you need is the size of an Isser. So even if you can't actually fit the Isser in, it's exactly the same size as it, the animal is already chased. Here you need a slightly larger amount, the amount that the Isser could actually go in to the hole and it could be able to go in or out. In other words, you need a little bit of space around it. Tosfos points out the point of that is also, it means to say, don't think it means that it's possible if you can fit in the Isser by thickness. Don't think that makes it possible yet. It would have to be that you, it would have to be the by diameter, exactly, not by thickness. That's Tosfos' point, right? Okay.
Why? What's the difference?
Because the difference is that the Chacham has the Kabbalah, that's only that amount is going to make it trick. Okay. It would kill it, whatever. Okay. What about Listica? What happens in another case? What if the corner was cracked along the length, in other words? We're not talking about if it was cracked along the width, then you have the same thing that we discussed before. Then it would have to be raised. But what about if it's cracked along the length? What's the shear that would make it straight? No, not necessarily between the rings. Along the rings, or it could be along the side of the ring where you only have the muscles closing it, whatever. The point is you have a crack there. Even if you only have left one cholya on top and one cholya on bottom, then it's kosher. Now, what do we mean by cholya? Rashi says two possibilities. One is that cholya means, like we used the expression earlier in the Masechta, it means one of these rings that goes around most of the way around the windpipe. So even if you only have one ring intact on top and one on bottom, then it's good enough. Because Rashi points out the reason is because if you have a cut or a crack or whatever along the width, the problem is it's likely to get wider and wider, and eventually, yeah. As opposed to if you have a crack along the length, as the animal stretches out its neck, the two ends are going to be held more tightly together. Therefore, it's more likely to heal. So as long as you have at least one cholya intact on the top and one on the bottom, then you're good. Rashi says another explanation. So Rashi's first explanation is it means one ring. Rashi's second explanation, which he prefers, is that a cholya means a group of three rings. Just like we have in Tittis, that a cholya is a group of three rings going around. So the same thing over here, a cholya would be three rings at the top and three on the bottom would have to be intact. Okay.
Now the top being not covered by anything else?
No. Again, so you have, here's the entire windpipe. So you have, Rashi's preferred explanation is, here's the top end of the windpipe.
Right.
You have the koiva, the thyroid cartilage. Right. Under it, you have the tabas agdola, the big ring. Under it, you have regular rings.
Right.
So therefore, as long as you have three of those rings on top are intact, and at the other end, before it goes into the lungs, you also have three intact, then you're good. Okay. Amrua kameh Rav Yechanan. So they told over this statement of Rav to Rav Yechanan. Omer, and Rav Yechanan says, I don't understand. Ma choyo, the Kamer Rav. What kind of choyas are we talking about? Who cares about choyas? Ela ema. No, rather the right way you should say, says Rav Yechanan, afilu lo nishtayba ela mashu lamailu u mashu lamata kshera. Even if only a tiny bit of the windpipe is intact on top and on the bottom that wasn't split. You don't need one cholya, you don't need three cholyas, so you don't need rings of cartilage or whatever to be intact. Even if only you have a little bit of the cornea itself is intact on the top and the bottom, then you're good.
Then
it would be kosher.
So
Rabbi Yechanan is being more makel than Rab, right? Amruah Kameh de Rabbi Yochanan Mishmeh de Rabbi Yonasan. So then they told over to Rabbi Yochanan that you should know, Rabbi Yonasan said the same thing as you do, that even if only a little bit of it is good, is okay, is intact on top and a little bit on bottom, then it's good. Hochi, like that. Amalahu, said Rabbi Yochanan, was impressed. Yadin Chavrin Bavloi Leforushik Yihai Taima. You're telling me that all Chavrin from Bavel, which is where Rabbi Yochanan came from, know how to explain these things? Because first you had Rav telling us they need one ring or three rings or whatever, and Rabbi Yochanan didn't accept that. But now when he's told that another one of the Chachamim from Bavel, namely Rabbi Yochanan, is saying that all you need is a little bit on top and a little bit on bottom, then he's very pleased with that. Good. I didn't know the Chachamim from Bavel know such things. Talking, let's get back a minute to, since we're talking about the Kohen. Rabbi Yochanan lived his whole life in Eretz Yisrael. Tonin of Chiyah by Yosef Kameh de Rabbi Yochanan, Kol HaSavar Kuloi Kosher L'Shchita, the entire neck of the animal is kosher for Shchita, Mitabas HaGdoyla Ad Kansei Reyat HaChtoyna. From the Tabas HaGdoyla, the big ring, the cricoid cartilage at the top, all the way until Kansei Reya HaTachtoina, all the way until the bottom lobes of the lung. Now, the lung we're going to deal with in more detail in a couple of blasts. But for right now, what's important to know is that the lung is made up of, the lungs of the animal are made up of lobes. They're made up of sections. Those sections are called Kansei, because they look like wings a little bit. And you have, in particular, so you have the windpipe goes into the lungs, but you have the top parts of the lungs, the top lobes of the lungs actually wrap around the windpipe, or partially around it or whatever. Here's a picture to illustrate it a little better. So there you have, I'll show you in a second. There you have the conner, the windpipe coming down, and you have the various lobes of the lungs sticking in different places, and some of them stick up along the length of it. Mm-hmm. So that's Kansei Reya. So now Rashi explains, now on the face of it, what do you mean Hatachtona? Hatachtona means the ones really far away at the other end of the lung. Rashi explains, because we're talking about when the animal is being hung up for shechting, or not for shechting, right? When you hang it up to strip off the skin and to cut it up or whatever. So then you have the animal is hanging head down. But then the upper lobes of the lungs now are the lowest ones, because now they're the ones closest to the ground. That's what we mean. The part of the neck in which you can shech, the point closest to the head, which when the animal is hanging downward would be the furthest down, yeah, it's hanging upside down, would be from the tabas agdola, from the big wing that we said, from the cricoid cartilage, and the other end of it would be until the kansei reya, until the lobes of the lungs,
you know
you're
next to the lobes of the lungs.
You would know, so that's the thing. You would know, you have a fair idea when the animal is alive, how high up or how low down, however you look at it, the lungs reach. That point is the furthest down that you can shecht. If you were to shecht any lower than that, if you find after the shchita that you cut into the lobes of the lungs, then the shchita is possible.
So you look up to after.
So you look after the pastures, yeah. Okay. So Omar Rabba Tachtoina Shehi Al Yoina. So what do we mean by Tachtoina? So that's what Rabba says. It means it means the lowest one when the animal is hanging head down, like you do, after you shecht it, Shehi Al Yoina, which when the animal is alive, it's actually the highest lobe of the lung, because the head is up. Shani Omer, and Rabba says, because I'm saying that you have to clarify what it means is, Kol Shepeshetet Tavara V'roya, the definition is that what's the part that you can shecht in, the part where the animal sticks out its neck in order to graze, or Vilvad Shaloi Te'onis, as long as you don't force it. Now, what that means is, in other words, like this, you have the animal's neck, sometimes neck is retracted. Sometimes it doesn't stick out. Sometimes it doesn't stick out its neck very much. Sometimes it sticks it out more. Right. When it's grazing, then it'll stick it out more because it's trying to reach the grass or whatever.
Right.
So, however, you can have, you know, you can have, on the other hand, the person who's shechting it can pull the neck.
Oh.
And then what happens is when you're pulling the neck, you're pulling the lungs along with it.
Yeah.
That means, in other words, you can have a point on the windpipe, which usually would be under one of the lobes of the lungs, but now you're pulling out the windpipe, so therefore you're pulling it out from that area, that doesn't count. You can't shecht in that lower area because normally that would, even though in this particular case it wasn't within the lungs, because when the animal is alive and when it normally stretches out its neck, then it. However, boi rab chanina, b'teim rab chananya, onsa asma mahu, what if the animal itself forced out its neck more? The Rashi explains we're talking about at the time of shechita, let's say the animal extended its neck more than normal. And so you have an area of the corner over there that usually would be within, that usually would be between the lobes of the lungs, and now it's not. But it's not because the shechit pulled it out, it's because the animal itself pulled it out further. Or Tosfos explains, let's say you could have, even when the animal itself is grazing, sometimes you can have, let's say Tosfos says, the animal sees something good to eat in a pit that's further down than it usually would be. So therefore it tried it, it stretches out its neck much further than usual in order to be able to get that. Would that area therefore be kosher for shechita?
You just said no.
No, we said if the shechit pulls it out, then no. What
so
if the animal?
The difference? We said
okay.
Because it pulls it.
No, no, no. But that's the question.
Out.
Is it maybe only if the shechit pulls it out? Maybe not if the animal itself pulls it out. So here's a different illustration to show it. You have, let's say, when the animal is alive. And when the neck is not stretched out more than normal, so this point over here, let's say, would be the furthest down in the windpipe that you could check. But if you stretch it out, then now you have this area also. The rubber is saying that if the shechit stretched out, you can't check there. But the question is, what if the animal itself stretched out during the time of shechita, as Rashi says, or while it's trying to get something from the bottom of pit, as Tosfos says? And the answer is teiku, we don't know, and therefore we have to be passable at misopic. We have to be machmer. Okay. Yosef Rav Yechanan and Rav Shimon Lakish, Nofak Milsa B'minayah, one time Rav Yechanan and Rav Shlokish are sitting together and they jointly said the following thing. Nofak Milsa B'minayah literally means the word came out from between them, but it means they both agreed to this thing. Nofak means it came out. Milsa, the word, B'minayah from between them. I mean, they both agreed to the following statement. Onas v'simonim v'shochad, if you force the simonim out, like we just said, you pulled them out further than you're supposed to, tfula, then it's possible to shecht in that area that would normally be under the lobes of the lungs, and now you're, so that's the answer. So that's an interesting thing, that Rambam combines these two things and says that they're both suffix, and so the Kesef Mishnah says, maybe what the Rambam understood is Rav Yechanan and Rav Shlokish are saying it's possible. They don't mean it's for sure possible. They mean, like we just said, teiku, we're not sure, and therefore it's possibly possible. Right. Okay. Next, some more dinim about the koneh. Nikav akoneh l'masim in achozeh. Now, what happens if you have, now, until now, we were talking about the koneh. We were saying, by the way, koneh and gargeres both mean the windpipe. Essentially, what it is really gargeres means the whole thing with the cartilage around it, and koneh really means just the windpipe itself. But basically, anyway, the point. No, in other words, you have the actual muscular tube itself or whatever without the cartilage, and then gargeres includes the whole thing with the cartilage. Anyway, now up until now we've been saying that when it comes to the corner, the gargaris, as you call it, we're saying that the only kind of thing that would make it possible is if you have most of it is missing, if you have most of it cut through, or we said if there's parts of it missing, then you have to have an ister's worth of space that's missing. So now the question is, but now that's all as far as the corner itself when it's in the neck. So nikav akonel amasim in achozeh, if there's a hole in it below the chest, nidon kereya, then at that point it's considered like lungs, and therefore even a small hole would make it possible. Tanan abanan, so since we mentioned the chozeh, we learn in a braisa, ezehu chozeh, what is the definition of chozeh? Rashi explains, the question is, we know that when it comes to the korban shlomim, you take the chozeh and the shoik, and you wave them, and you give them to the Kohen. That's his portion from the shlomim. Chozeh literally means the chest. So what is the definition of the chest for this purpose? How far does it extend in each direction? So, zeharoya es akarta. That means the part of the animal that sees the ground. In other words, the part that faces the ground, the underside of the animal, not the flanks. It doesn't include any of the sides. Lamasa, that's going down. It's the point. How far back? It's the part that directly faces down to the ground. It's considered the chaza.
The neck also faces to
the... The neck faces, but but the point is, in other words...
The lowest to the ground?
No, in other words, the point is that... Oh, so one second. As far as how... No, sorry. We're not talking about how far back it goes yet. That we're going to see soon. The point is, in other words, it's only the bottom... It's only along the bottom of the animal. It doesn't go up the side.
Okay.
It doesn't go up the side.
Okay. So the closest to the ground.
Yeah, right. Lamata, then it's like this. Okay, so we're saying like this. So the chaza is haroya sakarka, yeah. So Rashi says it means just the part that faces towards the ground. You don't go up along the side. You don't go up along the side, do anything. Lamata ad asaber. Then below, and again we mean below when the animal is hanging up after it's shechted. The extent of it goes until the neck. The part only until the neck, not further than that, not further up than that.
The
lowest part of the neck. Yeah, lamata lamaila ad keres, and up above the amount is until the keres, until that first large stomach, where the first large stomach here, you have the first stomach, the keres begins about here. So most of it is behind the rib.
What kind of limit is it?
The chaza begins from here, from the neck.
Right.
It goes back until here, until the area where the keres begins. Where that first stomach begins. After the, behind that is not considered the chaza anymore. Behind that is not the chest. It's a different part of the animal. From here to here, about. This is the keres over here.
Where's the diaphragm?
The diaphragm is in this diagram. It's not showing the diaphragm, but it would be about here. Yeah, actually it does. This is the diaphragm over here. So about over there, a little right behind the diaphragm, basically begins the keres. So that's the point. Therefore, so
that's the separation.
So that's the separation.
And the upper part
is until the neck. So starts sloping up.
Okay.
So from here, what from here to here, basically.
Just the first rib.
Because not because you have several ribs over
here. Down.
What? No, that's the only that's not that's, the ribs are over here.
And they're also over here. They go up to here, don't they?
No. Well, one second. That one's the first rib, right? But one second, that's what we're gonna say. Okay. Then what you do is you also cut off two ribs on each side. You cut off two ribs on each side. The zeh chaza, and it's a kohen. That whole thing is the chaza, is the chaza that you give to the kohen. So it includes the first two ribs. Although Rashi says it doesn't mean actual ribs. Rashi describes so like this: you have the first couple of vertebrae of the neck vertebrae don't have ribs attached to them. They just have like little projections sort of sticking out of them.
Right.
Rashi explains that's between the two ribs over here. Then you start having, then you have, as you go further down, you have the vertebrae that have ribs attached to them. So Rashi's saying the two that we're talking about over here, so Rashi explains we're not talking about the ones that we're not talking about the actual ribs. We're talking about the little ones that are closer to the that are around the neck. Rashi describes it here. Base flois akanes toyonos, the two little upper ribs, the shade bonnets from the two sides, and Rashi says at the end, the henches sovivakona, these are the ones that surround the windpipe. So they're not regular ribs that go that surround the chest. They're little projections over there that stick out by the windpipe. That's how Rashi explains it. Rabbeinu Hananel, in fact, explains that it means the actual ribs. Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hananel that it means the actual ribs, the actual first two ribs themselves.
Makes sense.
Okay, but that's how Rabbeinu Hananel explains. Rashi explains differently. And in fact, Tosfos points out, according to that, it would come out, according to Rabbeinu Hananel's explanation, it would mean, therefore, that the definition of chaza here is a little bit different than the definition of chaza as far as when they cut up an oila and burn the pieces on the mizbeach,
yeah.
Because the Gemara says over there that you don't take any ribs together with it. So therefore, if here we're saying you take two ribs with it, and Rabbi Nachmanal is saying it means two actual ribs, then it means it's a different cut of meat.
One second. For the chazir of the mizbeach, you're saying it's above the
ribs? For the chazir of the oila means there's no ribs involved at all.
So it's above the ribs.
It's just the meat from the lower part of the animal.
The
taich chazir is chest.
One second. Show me the picture.
Here's the picture. So the one when it comes to an oila is just this.
The ola includes this part?
The ola includes, the whole thing is burned on the mizbeach. But we're saying, in other words, when you cut the chaza out and from an ola and burn it on the mizbeach, you're not taking any of the sides of the animal and the ribs along with them. Whereas over here, Rabbeinu Hananel was saying that the chaza does include two of the ribs along the sides of the animal.
The ribs go all the way down.
The ribs go all the way down, yes, of course. But in other words, according to Rabbeinu Chananu, you're including the meat. You're including those two ribs from each side and the meat that's on them. According to according to Rashi, you're not. According to Rashi, the two ribs just means these two things over here. So therefore, according to Rashi, you're not taking any rib meat. That's a separate piece that goes on the mezeach. According to Rabbeinu Chananu, when it comes to an ola, you are taking this as well. When it comes to an ola, you're just taking this. That's the chazah. Anything of the ribs is a separate part. When it comes to the shlomim, Rabbeinu Chananu would understand that you're taking also this area as well as this area and giving that to the kohen.
So according to Rabbeinu Chananu, it's just the lower part here.
I'm not sure how I can make it any clearer, but maybe let's see let's see the colon diagrams again and see what we're doing over here. Okay, and then we'll call it there. Then we'll stop over here. Okay. According to Rashi, what we're doing is we're taking the chozer, which is the chest of the animal,
right.
And then we're also taking we're going from here to here. We're also taking, according to Rashi, we're taking not large ribs. We're not taking from the sides of the animal. We're just taking from the area of the neck, the two little ribs that surround the neck.
So according to Rashi, it stops over here.
Yeah.
And it starts somewhere above here.
Yeah. And according to Rabbeinu Chananu, you're also taking these two ribs from the sides of the animal. You're not just taking the bottom.
Okay.
You're also taking two ribs from each side and giving those to the kohen.
How far towards the back do we go?
From the beginning of the rib, I guess. So in that case, we'll probably include that relevant part of the back as well.
The whole part?
I guess. Yeah.
That's called the chazay?
That would be called, I guess. I guess according to Rabbeinu Chananu, that's what it means.
Okay.
Yeah.